Hello, and welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast. I'm Dan Reed. I encourage you to find me on social media. You can find the social media tab on the blog at www.culinarylibertarian.com. There you can also find my Patreon button and other buttons for support if you like what I'm doing to support the show or the podcast. And you can also email me at Dan, D-A-N-N, at culinarylibertarian.com. Well, today I want to talk about libertarianism. It is a big word, and in this upcoming election cycle, it seems probably important to discuss politics and something that isn't R and D, and the almost certain battle over some inanity between one and the other. I came to libertarianism officially. Well, I don't know what that really means. I didn't join a party. I didn't pay anybody. But I've accepted this concept, this ideology, as mine and what I think is probably the right one, about a year or so ago. And it was a shift from, I'm going to say Republican, but I don't really think that that's right. But I was listening to some podcasts and Mark Levin and Glenn Beck and for a little while Hannity and a couple of other ones. And since they weren't left, I liked what I heard, but I started to not like what I heard because it wasn't making a lot of sense. The couple of things in particular was the gotta go to war, gotta bomb, gotta bomb, gotta bomb. Well, that probably isn't the first best choice. So as I'm fumbling through looking for something that makes a little more sense to me, I found a podcast, and this podcaster's name is Tom Woods, and it was different. It wasn't what I was used to hearing, which was refreshing. And as I started listening to his show and listening to the content and listening for other libertarian thinkers, I stumbled across a lot of them that I'd never heard of. Ludwig von Mises and Murray Rothbard and Hayek and Hans Hermann Hoppe and Robert Higgs. There's a lot. There is an incredible amount of content. There are some of these people, Mises and Rothbard have passed away. Hoppe is still alive. Higgs is still alive. Walter Block is still alive. Jeff Deist is still alive. Lots of people who are writing about libertarianism and saying something completely different from what you're hearing and I'm hearing on the mainstream media. So libertarianism is easily a very misunderstood ideology. I saw a video recently about how libertarianism is this weird cultish religion, which was entertaining, if not almost entirely wrong. So I'm not really sure why or how it is so wildly misunderstood. But one of the things that initially was kind of appealing to me was a pretty simple couple of basic precepts. The non-aggression principle, which is pretty much don't hurt people. And the sort of extension of that is don't take their stuff. So that's kind of pretty easy. All that can really be reduced, I think, to private property rights. In your home, you reign, you're the sovereign. Your power ends at the property line where you are subject to the whims of the sovereign next door. Now, there's jokes in libertarian circles about what happens if you're a bad neighbor, but pretty much just want to, you know, live. Everybody just wants to live and just be in their house and do their stuff, and not be harassed, not be bothered. So the non-aggression principle, or the NAP, and don't take people's stuff, well, that's the easy part. It's getting into the weeds where things become much more complicated and much more challenging. And I think that challenge is one of the interesting features of libertarianism, because there's lots of ways to go. You can focus heavily on foreign policy, and there are some who do, and some who write books about this. You can focus heavily on economics, and many do that as well. In fact, a lot of those people whose names I mentioned at the beginning are economists. And why economics is important in libertarianism is because with the ability to control and print money, you kind of have the ability to control the people. This leads us into some of the nuances of the non-aggression principle. Non-aggression sounds pretty simple on its face. Yeah, don't go punch people. You certainly aren't offensive. Now, you can be defensive. If someone attacks you, you certainly have every right to defend yourself. You are your own person, and therefore your body is your private property, and nobody has a right to punch you. You have a right to defend yourself. You don't have a right to be the aggressor. What happens when it is the state who is the aggressor in the form of taking your money? Now, one of the popular axioms in libertarian circles is taxation is theft. If somebody were to come up to you on the street with a gun and take $20,000 of your yearly earnings, it is indisputably thievery. When someone in a suit, actually, someone in a suit you've never seen, driving a desk, says, "You owe me this money," we seem to not balk even a little bit, only to complain how high the taxes are. And the Republicans and Democrats are going to argue over 0.03% of a tax increase or decrease, and that's what you're voting on, is to still pay the taxes. Just can you save 10 cents at the end of the year with that guy or the other one? We would prefer certainly substantially fewer taxes. We would also prefer substantially less government. Now, one or two of the parties, and sometimes people from either party, may say we need smaller government. But smaller than what is really the main question. So, smaller than it is, of course. The non-aggression principle, where the state is the aggressor, so we want the state not to aggress, is a position that says we don't really also want rulers. We don't need the government or governors to manage us. We think that people by themselves are capable of deciding what it is they need to do and engage in voluntary transactions perfectly well every single day without any interference from the state making those decisions for us. A position of rules, not rulers, is the definition of anarchy. Now, that's an even scarier word, because I remember growing up where there was a book that came out called The Anarchist's Cookbook. And a friend of mine and I went in and we bought this thing. And it was directions on hand-to-hand combat and directions on building pipe bombs. We didn't actually do these things, but it didn't seem to me to be, well, it was fun because we were sophomores in high school. But as I think about what this word means, no rulers, that's certainly not what the book was about. The book was about chaos, and that word chaos, not the Maxwell Smart chaos, is what I think a lot of people envision in their heads when they hear anarchy. Pandemonium. People will be running wild in the streets. If only we had government to control the people. Well, I don't think on any given day, people are generally interested in being a mass hysterical mob. I think people generally prefer order over disorder. So I don't think that that necessarily holds water. I'm not entirely convinced that I feel like I should be an anarchist. I'm not entirely sure that I'm all the way there yet. And part of the reason for that is I'm not entirely sure I know everything I need to know yet. Well, does anyone ever know everything they need to know? As I'm reading and learning and growing in this ideology, and I'm going through economics books, I've got a few on the desk, I'm going through history books. One of the things I've discovered is the information that I've been given through my education in high school and college was probably one-sided and probably not altogether right. And there's a lot of examples, popular examples, that illustrate the point. Well, FDR and Lincoln and Teddy and a few others were just the best thing since sliced bread, and oh, where would the country be without them? Well, the answer to the question is more complicated than people would expect. Oh, well, we would be awful. Well, we might actually have been better off. But that's another show. The focus on history and getting things right isn't just for some academic pleasure of saying, see, we told you so, although I guess on some level there is that. It supports the idea that the state intends more harm than good. And some of the quick things to think about are the Tula Lake internment camps, which happened under Franklin Roosevelt, and that was an executive order, 9102 or 9105 or something like that. It wasn't some act of Congress. It was one guy deciding this had to happen. Same guy killing untold thousands of pigs and tilling under acres and acres and acres of cotton during the Depression to drive prices up for farmers who couldn't sell their products to people who couldn't buy them. Doesn't sound like a helpful thing to do. And there are just, I don't have them at the ready, but there are scores of examples where the state does more harm than good, and stealing your money is probably the first best one as an example. Certainly, you know better what to do with your money than somebody driving a desk in some city you've never visited. So economics becomes important not just because they're stealing your money. It also becomes important to understand that in moments of recession, be it 1929 or the one no one talks about in 1920 or the 2008-2009 problem, the problem behind these things was government or the Fed or a combination of those things. And while I'm still learning about that, I can refer you to some people who know this far better than I do. In terms of the Great Depression, that would be one Bob Murphy. And I'll put a link for his book, The Great Depression and what else did it say there? And the New Deal. I'll put a link for that on the show notes page. There's much to read in economics, and in particular, libertarians are concerned for the better understanding of Austrian economics, which is a pretty complicated school of thought. It isn't an actual building school, but an intellectual idea of how transactions happen. And I think the easiest way I can explain this, if the purists will allow this, is people engaging in buying and selling with those who wish to sell and buy. It's really pretty much just about as simple as that, and it is substantially more complicated than that. Austrian economics was, I think, really sort of envisioned by Ludwig von Mises and more popularized and extended by Murray Rothbard and then by Hans Hermann Hoppe and Bob Murphy. And it can get thick in the weeds fast, and we're going to stay clear of that right now. The other important aspect of thinking libertarianly is foreign policy. And this was an area of thought or politics that I had mostly ignored, failing to recognize that it had an impact and an importance right here in America for the people living here. One of the sort of sad tales of foreign policy is how little we actually hear about it from the mainstream media and how hard it is to go and find credible information about the goings-ons. Some of the goings-ons involve wars that we rarely actually hear about in terms of the mainstream media stuff. So we have to do some digging. There is information to be found, and we find it, and I'll put some links on the show notes page for places to find valuable, credible, correct information about what's happening around the world in terms of foreign policy. Why that's important is some of these times it's the American military that's causing the problem, not fixing the problem. And the mainstream media doesn't really seem to want to talk too much about that. It seems to be overlooked that we've been in Afghanistan 17 or 18 years. One of the jokes is the war is old enough to go enlist and fight for itself. And why exactly are we there? What are we doing? I did some hunting and found out that the U.S. military has some 800 bases around the world. And I think the next three countries, if I remember the information correctly, maybe England, France, and Russia combined have 27. Why do we have 800 bases around the world? And what exactly is it we're doing? It tends to appear that us being in foreign lands has a whole lot of resemblance to terrorism. If we're telling people in their homes how they need to live, well, how is that our business? So foreign policy is a really important concept and really important topic and a really important issue for libertarians. And that was one of the defining moments of Ron Paul's first, I may get that part wrong, one of the Rudy Giuliani moment. I will admit that when he was running, I was busy cooking. I wasn't paying attention to anything other than food. But I've watched clips of that exchange, and it's pretty hilarious, only in the sense that Rudy got a good smackdown. It wasn't hilarious that the content Mr. Paul was revealing was, well, it was true. As I make my way through my journey in learning more about what libertarianism is and means and can do, I think one of the chief focuses is a willingness and ability to question the status quo, question what it is that you've been told throughout your life in terms of American history, and then be prepared for a very, very different answer to the question of what did they get wrong in my historical education. It turns out lots and lots and lots. There are more books than I can cite, and I've got some of them near me and around me, and authors aplenty to guide you and guide me into rejecting the mainstream position of it's got to be R or it's got to be D, and the sort of just foolishness of thinking the fight that they're having amongst themselves has anything to do with your freedoms, because it doesn't. Libertarianism, root word liberty, and the current structure in Washington have nothing to do with each other. Was listening to a podcast earlier today, and one of the names that was mentioned that I failed to indicate earlier was a fellow named Lysander Spooner, who is pretty famous in libertarian circles and was a bit of a writer of libertarian thinking. And he is well worth seeking in finding his writings. They are different than what you're used to, but different than what you're used to given the state of affairs as they are probably really needs to be the prescription for everybody. A good place to start is questioning, even at the local level, your city councilman or your mayor or whatever size town you live in, whoever is in charge in your community. I'm not even sure that bothering with state matters too very much, because the problem is pretty much the same as it is in Washington, although at least in the state you live there, so there's some skin in the game. The federal election, it seems a wash. It doesn't seem to make any difference one way or the other, because they're all pretty much saying the same thing, just arguing over details. So I encourage you to join me on the journey, or continue with me on the journey, as I learn more about libertarianism and anarchy and anarchism. Libertarianism has its fair share of lefts and rights even inside of this, and lots of detractors and lots of segmentation. And I don't really follow most of that. I'm trying to keep my head above water. The idea of anarchy is rules, not rulers. And so that's an easy thing to remember. But how does one anarchy? There is a blog, no, wrong word, podcast called Actual Anarchy. And that's run by two chaps, Daniel and Robert. And they anarchy through movie reviews. The point there is, one, to listen to a couple of guys who are pretty smart about movies, talk about movies, but from a Rothbardian, which was Murray Rothbard, who was an economist who has a tremendous volume of books and videos to read and to watch, from a Rothbardian and an anarcho-capitalist viewpoint. So when these fellows are talking about the movies, be it the recent one of The Magnificent Seven or Star Wars, how, one, it's a movie, so it's, you know, suspend disbelief for 1 to 3 hours. But in the course of this movie, are there examples where liberty and anarchy and the state and individuals are clashing, and what examples can these scenes from the movie convey and share and show why the state is bad, why anarchy is better, and why voluntarism is really the prescribed way to go? So give them a follow or give them a listen at actualanarchy.com. I'll put a link for them as well on the show notes page. This is going to be a big show notes page. But lots of information, lots of places to go. I think I'm going to make this job easier for both of us. There'll be a link to a page on my blog called Think Libertarian. And there are 30 articles intended, for example, once a month, one article a day for a month, on how to think like a libertarian. Written in some cases by the fellows I had just mentioned. And if you're interested in more, there's some book links there for deeper investigation. But a good way to start is that page, so that'll be easy, and the Actual Anarchy page, and whatever else I forgot to mention that I will put up there. And that's the short version of my understanding of libertarianism and foreign policy and economics. Mine's growing every day. I'm reading more and more. It is a slow go, but it's worth the journey. So head on over to the Think Liberty link, which is on the show notes page. Easier to click than to read it off. Thank you, and I'll see you in the next episode.